Finally for today, I spoke to Tennant Reid from the Australian Industry Group about the ideas that group has for Australia's direction in terms of the types of projects that could both support recovery as well as help to reach emissions reduction targets, particularly in the light of the King Report, which has recently reported to the government with recommendations on that topic. Tennant, earlier this month, the chief executive of the Australian Industry Group, Innes Willocks, said that economic recovery from coronavirus should be linked to the transition to net zero emissions. But these King Review recommendations seem to tinker around the edges of climate policy without the transformational change needed to deliver zero emissions. And in fact, Angus Taylor has said he doesn't actually have a plan to deliver zero emissions by 2050. So what more needs to be done?
So you're right that the King Review and its recommendations are not a complete climate policy. They are about improvements to one of the existing policies that the federal government has, the Emissions Reduction Fund or Climate Solutions Fund. There's a lot more that is needed. The federal government is working on some of that. The states are working on some of that. Industry and private investors are working on some of that. But we do have a big task to bring it all together, to ramp up the ambition and the levels of investment and to get where we need to go, which is net zero emissions by 2050 and more broadly a successful global response to limit temperature rises, which we have seen a preview of some of the consequences of climate change over the terrible summer that we've had. And it is in our national interest to avoid as much of that as possible, and we're going to need to invest to adapt to what we can't avoid. So what would be helpful towards all that? One point is that we need to think much broader than the focus that has dominated a lot of climate discussion in Australia in recent years, which is the electricity sector. Electricity is very important. It supports nearly everything that we do in this country, but it's only a third of current national emissions. And while we have some very good solutions in electricity, renewables are getting cheaper all the time, and we have emerging solutions to facilitate a higher level of renewables in the electricity system, there's plenty of other important sectors where we have not come nearly as far or as fast, and we do need to address those to have a clean economy. So transportation, heavy industry, agriculture, the built environment, there's a lot of changed technologies and improved practices that are needed there, and all of them have their own market design or regulatory or policy mechanism challenges to bring that about.
Going back to the idea of linking emissions reduction efforts to the COVID-19 recovery, how could those sectors you mentioned benefit from that recovery effort?
Some of the investments that we need to make and the steps that we need to make for the long-term transition either won't be practical for over the next few years, which is currently looking like the recovery timeframe, or there are steps that can be done that will pay off, but they won't have a large immediate economic dividend. They will still be very important to take. The things that can provide that big dividend, the number one option that many, many stakeholders agree needs to be pursued is a substantial lift in the productivity and the smarts of how we use energy across the economy. Residential buildings, in commercial buildings, government buildings, in industry, there's a lot of improvements we can make to our built environment that will save energy, use energy more smartly, and in putting those improvements in place will provide a lot of stimulus across the construction sector, the white goods and appliances retail sector, the skilled trades, and an opportunity to reskill a lot of workers in sectors that at a minimum will take a considerable time to recover and migrate those workers into activities where there's bigger potential to employ them. So the specific kinds of opportunities in efficiency include improving the thermal performance of buildings so that they stay cooler in summer when we are going to see more and more extreme temperature days, however successful we are on limiting climate change. We need to upgrade the wiring, the switchboards, the smart meters of houses across the country. Outside of Victoria, there's a very low take-up of smart meters, and that's a technology that is essential for getting the full potential out of solar households, battery households, and the demand response that households and other buildings can give to stabilise the electricity system at a cheaper cost than building big new infrastructure. There are wiring improvements that we can make to support the uptake of electric vehicles, where charging, if we're smart about it, charging those vehicles can avoid creating additional strains on our networks, but we need to be able to charge them at the times and in the places where it makes most sense. And provisioning for that in the near term can get a lot of activity going in different parts of the country.
During the former global financial crisis, the Labor government here put into place stimulus measures such as the Home Insulation Project. Similarly, the sorts of things you were just talking about could provide employment. Is the industry group putting in submissions to the government's COVID Commission regarding these?
So we are talking to the federal government, the state government, to the COVID Commission about the full range of recovery steps. Recovery and energy transition are overlapping subjects, but they're not the same subject. And there are other priorities too, but we're definitely in touch with them. And we're also coordinating with a lot of other peak bodies, unions, social welfare groups, environment organisations. There's a very broad consensus on the value of using our recovery investments to build back stronger. And with an eye to our long-term challenges, and climate change is one of the biggest of those. What's important is that we do have confidence we're going to realise the potential, that where there are implementation risks, and you know, we saw how things can go awry with the former home insulation program, that we take the time needed to design programs and incentives that are going to work to ensure that professional standards and product standards are in place and well enforced to guarantee safety and quality, and that we bring affected industries along so they can ensure that the skills and the supply chains are in place to actually take up these opportunities.
Is there anything in the King report that provides value or impetus to the sorts of ideas you've just been talking about?
There's a lot of good stuff in the King report. We've characterised it as an important engine tune-up for federal climate policy. You do still need to ensure that there is fuel in the tank, that is, that the mechanisms that are currently there, which are about public funding and public demand for abatement to drive emissions reduction, that there is adequate resources available to the Clean Energy Regulator, the Australian Renewable Energy Agency, and the Clean Energy Finance Corporation that are equal to the scale of the abatement challenge. And you also need to ensure that there is, to continue the metaphor, you've got a clear destination plugged into the GPS. That is, that where we want to get to is net zero emissions by 2050. The government's technology roadmap, released today acknowledges the Paris Agreement, which we've committed, is targeting global net zero emissions by the second half of the century. All the states and territories have adopted or are adopting a net zero emissions by 2050 vision. And that is an important point to cohere around so that we can make the decisions about prioritisation and about the scale and urgency of action that are needed to get there.
We've heard a lot about the plans for a gas-led COVID recovery and some pretty big potential gas projects that could be part of that. Do you believe gas is part of the solution?
The role of natural gas is, it's a many splendid thing. Natural gas is currently important to the economy as a source of dispatchable electricity or a fuel for it, as a source of process heat for industry and heat for households and commercial operations, and as a feedstock for chemicals that we use in agriculture and mining and across the economy, and for plastics too. So some of the roles that gas plays can be displaced in the near term by electrification or by alternate feedstocks. All of it could be displaced in the longer term by biogas, by hydrogen, by synthetic methane, but we have a way to go before those things are at a scale where they can do full displacement. And so what we need is a balance, a strategy where we are developing the supply that we need for as long as we need it, with an eye to the fact that we're not going to need, for in a net zero emissions world, we're not going to be using gas in the same volumes and in the same ways that we're using it today. Mm. We need action on the demand side to implement gas efficiency and fuel switching wherever that makes sense across the economy, and there's a lot of places where it does. We need to develop those alternative forms of supply, and there are biogas projects that we can do today from municipal waste streams and other waste sources where you can generate quite a lot of methane. We need to put in place the building blocks for the hydrogen transition. We've got enormous national opportunity in hydrogen production and in derivative industries like green steel. Now, today, hydrogen is a very expensive substitute for natural gas. Even as upset as gas users have been about gas prices in recent years, hydrogen is more expensive again. But we do have a prospect for getting that cost down dramatically, and for Australia to be one of the best places in the world to make hydrogen. So to seize that potential, we should be making substantial investments now in hydrogen production to speed the technology down the cost curve.
And especially green hydrogen, as it's called.
So there's two options on hydrogen. Green hydrogen, electrolysis of water using clean electricity, and blue hydrogen, making hydrogen from methane or from coal, but using carbon capture and utilisation or storage. If I had to guess, I would say that in the long term, the vast bulk of hydrogen produced will be green hydrogen. Blue hydrogen may actually have some very good project opportunities over the next decade. But what we need, wherever the hydrogen comes from, is to ensure that the emissions are low or zero. Electricity sector is not yet fully clean. The amount of emissions that can be captured from carbon capture and storage is partially an engineering question, but it's also a what is the policy driver that's valuing emissions or sequestration. So we do need to make sure that those promises of cleanliness are met, whatever the source of the hydrogen use.
And just finally, going back to the topic of transportation that you mentioned before, in this country, we haven't, like other countries, introduced any measures to encourage the uptake of electric vehicles, and our emission standards for our current fleet are pretty woeful. What would be the AIG recommendation in that area?
So this is a space that's moving fast. Over the years, we've been supportive of the idea of vehicle fuel efficiency standards to drive incremental improvements in combustion engine vehicles and the take-up of zero emissions vehicles. It is looking increasingly like, at least in the light vehicle space, electric vehicles will predominate before too many years have passed, certainly in global markets, and that the potential of more efficient existing internal combustion engine vehicles is very much less. So I would say that this is actually an unanswered question. What is the best way to proceed? Other countries are experimenting with setting phase-out dates for combustion engine vehicles. There are different forms of grant or purchase incentive or subsidies at registration or the installation of subsidised charging infrastructure to speed along the uptake. We don't have a single best solution to that, but it is clear that we are well behind in the adoption of electric vehicles and putting in place the infrastructure that people need to make it a real option for them. The global automotive industry is beavering away at getting costs down, and we see exciting announcements from different auto companies every week, just about, on the range, the performance, and the cost of those vehicles. So it's something that whatever form of support for the uptake we provide, we do need to get on it, because that's where our future lies. That and, as we all discovered in the past couple of months, there's quite a bit of travel that, when it comes down to it, we can do without.
Exactly.
If we've got good video conferencing in place.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks very much, Tennant Reid, for speaking to Radio Adelaide.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you.